Coming up this week is Australian music royalty. Oh, this is a goodie. Here we go.
Welcome to Ramble City.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Ramble City. This is episode 39 featuring one of the great Australian guitar players of all time, one of our most celebrated artists, Ian Moss. If you're an international guest, perhaps you've heard of Cold Chisel or some of Ian's hits, Tucker's Daughter, Telephone Booth. He's currently on tour for his latest album. It's the Rivers Run Dry tour. Notice it's rivers, not river. We talk about that during the podcast. He's got dates coming up all over Australia over the remainder of 2024. So you can find those via the show notes. I really enjoyed this conversation. We start out pretty casually talking about him being on the road with this new show, what it's like being just you and an audience and an acoustic guitar, and how that changes the songs he sings, the stories that he tells. We then dig into how making albums has changed since he started with Chisel in the 70s. And in it, I do some history and find where the idea of the album actually comes from. Spoilers, it's the early 19th century, but you can wait and listen to that. Be sure to visit our YouTube page and social media platforms for some extra video and some extra questions that I asked Ian, including his top four albums. So I'll be back at the end for a little hello, but that's it. Let's get stuck into this wonderful chat with Australian great Ian Moss. All right, you're currently on the road. You've been on and off with this tour since October 2023 and it's going now till June 1st this year.
Yeah.
How do you go with all the travel and going stop to stop, and how do you manage that part of the lifestyle?
Well, I must admit, when you see all the dates all on one page, it's certainly a lot of dates, but they're fairly spread out. Generally, it's weekend work, and so it's pretty manageable. I just make it hard for myself by insisting on a lot of driving everywhere. But sometimes that's it's getting to the stage where that's, if you're doing 16-hour drives, and you feel great at the end of it. Yeah, it was fantastic. But then next two days you're going, oh, geez, I think I might have to stop this soon.
You're fine until you got to do a gig that night. You get up at 4 a.m., drive the 12 hours. I know that's not what you're doing, but that must have been what it was like when you started out, like with Chisel, probably not with your solo when Matchbook came out and that, but were you always driving back in the day and just jumping in the van with the boys and off you go?
Well, yeah, in the early days when the pub scene was just crazy and We'd start tours, particularly on the East Coast. We always seemed to start in Cairns and then work our way down city to city, playing five nights a week. But, we're a lot younger then. But it was all, in those days, airfares were pretty formidable. But I think we all enjoyed the camaraderie anyway of being in a vehicle. We had our own vehicle. Victoria had a Land Cruiser with massive roof bars on it and governors on it, so no one would drive it too fast.
And it's different when you could share the driving with a band necessarily, because, with this tour, it's you and a guitar, and I'm sure you've got a team that's traveling with you, but it's you.
Well, I mean, just me. The solo acoustic run is generally me. I've got a sound guy, but he's got, he carries all the gear, and he's in a big, uncomfortable truck. So, and we need to travel at different times. He obviously needs to get to the gig hours before me to set up, and needs to get going early in the morning to get to the next gig to be set up for when I eventually amble my swag backside in there.
Once you've had your four different coffee stops, then petrol.
Yeah, played a bit of tourist.
All the various big fruits along the sidewalks of Queensland.
Yeah. Giant pineapples, et cetera.
Do you have any focuses, like when you're on the road, like any ways of – any tricks you've picked up over the time? I know for me, when I'm traveling, I start to get into a different mindset. Like it becomes like a different mantra or meditation, and like all of the life problems that you have kind of just fade away. You don't have to worry about those things so much, because the only focus is either getting to the next venue in the next town or just seeing the town that you're in. And it's easier to be in the day. Do you find that?
Yeah, you mentioned the word mantra or something. There's something so calming, so settling about the drive, starting the drive.
Yeah.
Seeing, I never get tired of seeing Australian countryside, and it's just, yeah, such a calming, soothing effect. I don't know. Yeah, I've often thought about it. Part of me thinks maybe there's a...
Is it the way you live more than not?
Yeah, you've been touring. Guilty a bit sometimes, whether it's just, you know, I'm a permanent escapist, because it feels like you're getting away from something, and you're, no matter what you're going to, it's always going to be something good, and it's going to be peace and happiness at the end of it.
The show and sharing music with people.
Yeah, I guess so. Enjoy the solitude. But as far as dealing with it, you know, there's plenty of things you can do. Listen, you can just enjoy the silence and take in the scenery, or these days, you know, whatever, music, podcasts to listen to, audio books and stuff like that. So
you agree with me that it is like we're escaping real life. Yeah, that's what you reckon too. You reckon it's like this like little kid thing, we get to be permanent tourists.
Yeah. I think that's why I do it. I'd rather than go to the airport and fly there and go to the destination. I mean, that's escapist feeling as well, but it doesn't last as long because you get there too quickly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Then you just sit around for the hours waiting for the show to happen. So on this tour, it's just you and a guitar. And obviously, there is great budget marvels. The accountant's looking at this tour cost and going, this is genius. Why haven't I thought about this?
But Yeah. It's true, yeah. But the profit line, yes. Yeah.
But when it's you in an audience and it's you, your guitar, that would be very different for people that aren't in the business and aren't doing, you know, doing the show, to understand that how different that is to being with a band and the feeling of those shows. What is it like when you're there, just the guitar, and you walk out and it's like, it's just you?
Well, it's pretty amazing. I mean, often thinking about this, you kind of, you know, both it's either out with a band, that's great because you've got someone playing all the chords and laying down a rhythm, so you can have a bit more fun doing single note solo guitar work, which you can't do on acoustic because you can't go rambling off on single notes for too long because the song is gone. And that's because a good challenge in itself.
Because you're holding down the rhythm too. Technically, it's like you're the meat and potatoes of the song. And so then if you want to branch out and get a little fruity with it, it's like, well,
yeah,
it's just you.
It's just you. So, you know, you're trying. I'm still learning figuring how to do it, you know, to do that. It's a classic jazz technique, to sort of go bang, state the chord so people know, and then play some licks. So you've established a chord so people know
how to interpret the lines.
Things like that. But still, the trade-off is, because I'm just one man and acoustic guitar, but like I say, I mentioned my sound guy who carries the gear around, and he carries some serious gear around. So I've got some fairly serious sound system. It's a big sound. And the thing is, I'm not competing with any other instruments. So the whole sound on stage is just me, and the sound coming back to the room is just my voice and guitar. So you work with all that, and it just feels gigantic. And you've just got this whole soundscape all to yourself.
Do you feel the audience engaging with you in a different way? Like, does it feel like a different, is it, I know it's more intimate because it's you, but as a performer, do you feel like a more intimate part of your personality comes out with the audience in that way?
Possibly.
Do you tell different stories? Do you find, like, do you tell different stories, or like, because, you know, with the band, it's a bit bigger, isn't it? It's like, thank you and let's go, and it's kind of like that energy's up, and then here it's more.
Well, yeah, I mean, I certainly get the energy up, but it's an excuse. I love telling the stories about the songs, and that's, you know, I've always been fond of lyrics and fond of singing songs that have great lyrics and great stories, and behind them are the stories you can actually tell, and that's probably the only time it really makes sense.
To
tell the stories is one man and the guitar. Otherwise, yeah, it doesn't really work with a band. With a band, you're right. You tend to go, thank you very much. Here's a song about blah, 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 and keep
that energy going.
Smash it out. But there's so many great stories in most of my songs. I think so. I just look forward to being able to relax, take the time, and then tell the story, and then get into it. And if people have set up for or you know, they know something about the song. They know, so they're starting to listen to what the song is about in relation, what the lyrics are in relation to the story you just told. And generally, with the old solo acoustic thing, is they can probably hear the stories a lot more clearly because I'm not competing with other instruments. And generally, that's been the case with my singing. People, I actually do a lot better as far as so band Ian Moss out there with the band versus Ian Moss out the solo. I do so much better in the solo world as far as the numbers of people I draw, and people say it's because we can sit there and we can hear you sing properly. You know, it's not,
yeah, right. Not so they're sort of going, we like that we don't have to battle with all the different EQs and there's instruments and everything that's coming at them. They're like, we want to just see Ian Moss, you know, and it feels a bit more like it's Ian. It's my mate Ian with his guitar, and he's sitting at the campfire, he's sitting at the kitchen table, or he's in the living room playing these songs and telling me these stories, and they can hear it clearly. They can actually hear what they can hear what you're singing, and I can hear every word, you know.
Yeah, well, that's it. Well, and that's also, you know, the environment, because I'm exclusively pretty much playing in theatres, which means a couple of things, which means it sorts out the people that are kind of half interested in seeing you but half catching up with mates and yelling at each other over a beer while you're performing.
Yeah.
This is just people, they're there to listen, and generally the acoustics are great, and it's a great environment for people, those people that want to just take in all the music.
Do you have a favorite song to play, like that you find that it epitomizes what we've been talking about? Like there's a song that when you play that, you feel like they see the song in a new light? Like I imagine, like with something like Tucker's Daughter, which everyone I think has, every Australian has an experience with that song, to me, like you know it in some way, in some shape or form, whether you've heard someone play it at a pub, or you knew it when you came out, or you're a musician that's learnt the song, all that sort of stuff. I imagine when you hear it in acoustic too, the line "slap my knee bone to the ground" actually takes on like a different kind of meaning, because you know when you're singing it on the record, and it's like yeah, slap it to the ground. But when I was listening this week, I found myself going, I wonder what he meant when he wrote that. And it probably didn't mean anything, or you know, you or Don. but you know, like I imagine they're taking the lyrics in that way. But so to come back to a question before I ramble myself into a circle that I can't get out of, is there a song that you think that people have a different experience with? What's your favorite one if you had to pick one?
Yes, difficult one, because I am currently doing, as you mentioned, the Rivers Run Dry tour. Particularly the title track is something I can really deliver and get very emotional about, because it is very much a true life story. I've written about a childhood mate of mine from my hometown of Alice Springs.
Right.
And 4 years ago, he liked to smoke a lot and drink, and I know he's always had a little bit of a heart aberration, even though he's an athletic kind of a guy, really, and was all any sport he played, he was a star at. So he had this thing of, what a constitution, nothing will ever take this guy down. And then, just not long before it happened, I started to think, well, does he have that constitution? Is he that much of a superstar? And then next thing I got this call saying, your mate's just had a serious stroke. And when we started, at the time of commencement of writing the song, it was that bad, we weren't even sure he was going to pull through.
Wow.
He has. But, a little worse for wear, as it's a pretty serious, non-reversible, irreversible event.
Yeah.
So, thinking that is, my heart's so much right there every time I sing that. So
it lands a bit more, doesn't it? Because they can really hear the words, hear you landing them with them, like telling the story.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. All right, well, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we're going to talk more about River Runs Dry. We'll be right back.
Okay.
This is what it really spoke to me about when I was singing along to "Open Your Eyes" in my car at the lights as someone's looking at me like, why is he so bouncy? I was the idea of, I think, so let me start with this. I then started to wonder where the idea of the album came from, like this idea of the album. And this is, if you're hanging with me here for like 2 minutes, I'm going to outline what I found. Now, you may know all this already, right? So the term album was coined before vinyls came out. It was actually used in collecting. It was borrowed from books and the idea of like a photo album, collecting photographs in the late 19th century. So that was even before then. The first record came out. This we would have before the first vinyl that we think of as the vinyl, the 33 and a third. There was books full of instead of photos, an album of photos would be an album of discs. And so that was where this album of discs, this sort of idea came from.
Okay.
Then the vinyl comes out in 48. Columbia has the first successful 33 and a third long playing double-sided thing that we think of, the actual album. And then that was when we really started to think of the album historically as like a collection of songs in like a single package. So 48. And then after that, there's like, you know, singles and EPs in the 50s. And then we got stereo LPs and then cassettes and CDs and now the MP3. But it was kind of amazing to me that when I was listening to your record, as I call them, it really felt like a true record to me, like a record. And it was such a beautiful thing to feel like from start to finish, I was going on this journey through these collections of songs where there was a theme and there was a story that was happening. And you know somewhere that the writer and the performer has gone on this kind of journey through the record themselves in their life. It's a part of the story. And when I went back through this kind of history thing, that the original term was a collection of memories packaged together, that kind of feels like it kind of all comes together the way that we pictured the album. And I think we're getting further away from that, which is why Rivers Run Dry felt special to me to enjoy, because it seems the idea of that is becoming less and less popular. Would you agree?
Yeah, well, I keep having these discussions every time I said it's time to start getting some new material together to record another something or other. But it seems to be this continuous thing. Oh, well, you're not really, you know, these days it's all about singles, singular songs. So we don't really need to record an album, yet somehow we do and still do. And those discussions about, I just do some singles, always slip out by, and the next minute we're planning for an album and working really hard. And I don't know whether it's just the old school thing. I don't know. I can't imagine being happy with that.
Me too, Ian. And that's, I think people are like that too. Yeah. People still, so in person, people will go, oh, I'm so glad they're holding this vinyl or whatever. And it's like, I'm so glad that this exists. You know, it's not about not appreciating the music. It's the album that I find curious. You know, you look at just the way digital has shifted a lot of industries, and I'm just sort of asking more people about it on the show because I think it's something that it's important to at least just kind of make listeners a little hip to, not in a scary way, just kind of in a way that says, you know, there's a lot that goes into an album that makes it a work of art, not just, you know, there's the songs on their own, but, you know, with Rivers Run Dry, you got a collection of songs from different writers, and it came together in this really beautiful way, hasn't it? Like, it's such a cohesive record. And do you feel that when you make a record that you go through a journey yourself that is imprinted on that album?
Well, yeah, I do. And I think you mentioned the word cohesive, which is, say, for this particular record, the Rivers Run Dry album.
Sorry, the Rivers Run Dry album. Got a pop in the sound. I'm not sure. Was that?
In that the songs actually, truth be known, some of these songs have been around for a long time. But I'll go backwards. What's happened is I've ended up with an album full of songs which are some really variations in styles of song on the Rivers Run Dry album. It's quite immense, quite vast, eclectic. State of My Emotion, just Latin rock. Bury Me is kind of bluegrass. You know, Nullarbor Plain, country rock, country normal rock.
There's a hint of 80s to me too. There's a hint of like the 80s kind of Robert Cray kind of thing to me in it. I don't know if that was on purpose, but maybe that's just because I love a record like Strong Persuader that I'm going to feel like that, because I know it's your style, it's you.
But the last time is Jeff definitely in that camp, I think. And that's the thing. That the last time, that was pretty much written in in 92.
Yeah, right.
State of My Emotion, which is one I love, and that was a track of myself and Kerry Jacobson, my drummer, current drummer, is the original drummer for Dragon. Those ideas, that started in 2000, went through many changes, and it was only in just in the last year before we sort of finally realized a feel we just needed this one part, this bridge part, and that came together in about 21. So we finally, it was just like everything was, it's not right. We just, the years slipped by, and we finally feel like we just, that's how long it can take. So your songs like that, Bury Me is quite recent, and obviously Rivers Run Dry, the title track, is very recent. I'm Going Back, the track with Troy. I had that music going in my head, and that line, just I'm going back to something, to somewhere, whatever, from about 2008, and got Troy interested in that.
It sounds like you've just sort of got me hip to something here, and like it sounds like that with an album, what happens is, you know, a songwriter and entertainers, we kind of have these songs that kind of carry around in our bag, and you're sort of collecting them, whether someone else's or your own. And sometimes it's very clear how they all sort of come together in a cohesive way. Sometimes it's really clear, for instance, my debut record was called Worried Minds, and it's like a Motown, blue-eyed soul kind of record. And it was very clear that that's what I wanted to do. It was kind of Smokey Robinson kind of inspired, and we got like a Wrecking Crew kind of unit to make it. And it just, that's what it was, and it made sense. But there were songs that kind of didn't necessarily make sense in that collection. They were around, but they were saved for other things. So, with putting then those songs into the studio with that team, the songs go on a journey and the artist goes on a journey, and this is the craft, and I hope this isn't getting too boring for everybody listening. Like, shut up, go back to Rivers. But it's that maybe it's then having the experience of doing the album that allows the real creativity and the art to kind of exist, whereas maybe some modern music practices are getting very, do a single and we can hone in and it's going to be like this for this commercial reason. And it's less about the exploration, and it's less about finding something, and it's less about going on a journey, and it's more of a business kind of decision. And not to say that you don't pick, that labels haven't always encouraged singles, and thank goodness they do, because we probably wouldn't have Twist and Shout, and we probably wouldn't have Satisfaction, and, you know, or Telephone Booth, or all this stuff. But at some point there's kind of this middle line, you know what I mean, that kind of is in the industry. So I don't know, you just kind of got me thinking about that as you were talking about these songs that you've had, that maybe you were waiting for Rivers Run Dry, the song, to come along to make them all make sense, and kind of this idea of an album comes forward, and then it's away you go, you're off to the races with this album.
Well, I can sort of feel in with that. I mean, because I know what you mean, with, because even with Matchbook, that was way back in 88, 89, that was, we don't, and it happens a lot, or even before that, Cultures also, with 20th Century album, with we pretty much finished that and thought, doing the big listen back, sort of, oh, does anyone else feel like they just need one more special something? And I was like, yeah, you're probably right, be good, but what's going to be this? That's when the late, great Steve Prestwich, who wrote songs like When the War Is Over, you know, the drummer for Cold Chisel, Forever Now, Best Kept Lies. And with this next song, he's the one who said, look, I've got pretty much got all the music for a song, but I don't have any lyrics. So he picked up an acoustic guitar, and Don went, that's Donnie, who comes to the rescue quite often with the lyrics, but has to like the music he's hearing. Said, that sounds great. Give me a crack at that overnight. Went home, came back the next day. He hadn't slept a wink, but he was just charged. And that, when you get such a great story as the one I'm about to tell you, he wrote, it can have that effect on you. It's so gratifying, such a uplifting high, natural high. He came back with this set of lyrics and went through it, and next thing we know, we're in the studio, and a couple of hours later, we had Flame Trees.
That's insane.
Yeah, history speaks for itself. I did a similar thing with the Matchbook album. So, I just need something else. And then Don said, look, I've got this one thing. I didn't know if it would suit or not, but what do you think? And produced Such a Beautiful Thing, which is a pretty important song on that album.
Wow. So, these ones weren't planned. They were discovered in the process. They were found. They were, it wasn't this obvious kind of 1 + 1 = 2, it's 1 + 1 = 2, but then luckily you kind of find another number laying around and that's what gives you 7. That's a really, really bad way of summarizing.
1 + 2 = 7.
Thank God I host a podcast, right? All right, break and we'll come back because I've got some quick fire questions and anything else you want to add on to this. We'll take a quick break.
Sure.
We're back. So I'm still working out what I'm going to call this kind of segment, which is where it's kind of some quick fire questions. I haven't really given a name, so we're just going to call it quick fire questions for Mossy. First one, you mentioned Don Walker before, songwriter, piano, pianist, organ player for Cold Chisel, an incredible songwriter. He once said, now get ready to be embarrassed, you're one of the most gifted songwriters, or was it musicians? One of the most gifted songwriters or musicians he has ever seen.
Wouldn't have been songwriting.
Right, now that I remember, he said something different about songwriting, didn't he?
I think singers or musicians or something.
I think it was musician. I think it was. I thought I had it right in my doc. Let's keep it. That's just me not being prepped enough, clearly. So how do you feel about that? Like, Australia is known for tall poppy syndrome and you're an iconic Australian artist, but how does it feel even for you when someone like Don, who I'm sure to you he's a genius in his own right, get that sort of praise? Where do you put that? Like, do you absorb it like a normal human being, or do you just push it off and be an Australian and go, sure, she'll be right?
Oh, look, coming from Don, who one hand praises out like that too easily, it means a lot. But I'm one of these dudes with that an ego with a hole in it. I sort of feel like I can do all right on a good day, but then I'll start second guessing myself and listening back who am I kidding?
Why did I make that? Come on, mate, get it together. That was the wrong choice in the wrong moment for the wrong song. What are you doing?
All that kind of stuff. I'm a typical sort of insecure sort of muso, really.
So what you're saying is you're not going to get it tattooed on you, but you don't mind people bringing it up in general conversation. That's what we're saying.
Yeah,
all right, number two, pub rock, right? This idea of pub rock. So for non-Australian listeners, of which there are many to this podcast, pub rock is the same as kind of the British idea of pub rock in the 70s, but it's Australian rock and roll, inner city suburban pubs, noisy, hot, small, crowded venues with loud riff-based heavy rock is what Wikipedia says. But the idea of pub rock has kind of gotten a bit of a negative slang to me now. At least maybe it did when I was growing up, this idea of pub rock. Like, it's like this thing we have to be embarrassed about. It's like the part of our Australian culture we're embarrassed. But you listen to these classic, what are considered pub rock albums, it's very melodic. It's these big concepts lyrically. Like, it almost feels like pub rock is talking down to, for example, what you're saying, Flame Trees, like these classic songs. Do you think that the term pub rock is kind of a little, it's lost some of maybe what it really means? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm trying to process that thought, but I do agree. It's kind of, it's got a slight sort of.
Or maybe it's
a slightly unflattering kind of term, isn't it?
To me, and when I returned to prep for this and I was listening to the early Chisel stuff, I was like, these are incredible records, flat out. Like, just straight out, this is guys that know what they're doing, like playing incredible music that then just resonated with a lot of people. But it's pub rock. It's kind of like, it's not like you're just like, dunga, 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 when I do those jobs and then I want to go and get some fish and chips. That's what I think pub rock is, you know what I mean? And I'm not doing an Angels impression, I promise.
It was pretty good, though. That was nice singing. What's the Scar English band? Particularly in Australia, there was a lot of that. Didn't really start till maybe the mid 70s, the 76, the full on pub rock scene. Before that, it was. I remember, being a teenager and getting down to Adelaide and going to venues, and they were more sit cross legged on the floor. All sorts of venues all over Adelaide,
like listing venues.
Yeah, the more listening. They weren't necessarily. Certainly wouldn't have been drinking then. I don't think they were even licensed. Right. It was all about the music and people going to listen. It wasn't this, and it was just a lot more hippie-ish, I suppose. Sort of took your time between songs and tuned up a bit, then chatted and this next song's about. But then the pub rock thing, apart from sort of this whole atmosphere change, then there was alcohol. They're overpacked, crazy overpacked. So it led to and so hot and sort of just venues that literally Manly, if I remember, the moisture from the crowd condensing on the roof and then raining back down.
Wow!
People going, oh god, whose moisture was that?
I mean, oh my god! bottle it.
we're up on the stage, and there are other venues. At times that the publicans would go right, let's shut all the windows and turn the air conditioning off. So, the heat, the incredible heat, you see all those photos of us. We were always just drenched from head to foot. The audience wasn't far behind.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was dangerous for a start because they're overcrowded. Some of those venues, I thought, I'd be up on stage. Manly Vale was a beauty. It had an exit door way over in that far corner and this thing would be just packed. And it was on the first floor. Exit. There's no windows to jump out. And if you could, you'd then break your legs because it's too short, stuff like that. Be on stage going, this is not the night.
I should laugh. God.
But but then it created, and then we got into this thing of it's all about, you've got to keep people entertained as we discuss sort of don't take breaks between songs. You've got to keep it going like this, keep it going up and designing the set. So everything was designed to go. Rev up.
So it was built by the end, playing the venues you're playing, you started to then shape your set list and maybe your song choices, like then the next records and stuff like that. You'd pick songs that would be
possibly,
those venues?
It almost seemed difficult to you're almost afraid of playing ballads or turning down or relaxing and pulling back. Mm. But having said that, name how many rock songs of Cold Chisels, for example, were radio hits. You think of all our radio hits, they're all non-frantic rock
songs.
Cheap Wine, Choir Girl, Forever Now, My Baby, Flame Trees, K-San, Country Rock.
Maybe the only thing, You Got Nothing I Want, which seemed to more set up maybe where Jimmy Barnes was going, and I say Jimmy because I haven't met him, but that was kind of then where that vocal sound kind of went for him, wasn't it?
That's a very good point. That's possibly a true end up. Well, even though I don't know how well that song did on the charts, but it was a great song and it was a great pub commercial song and it was very hard, pretty hardcore.
Yeah. So I think this requires some deeper kind of exploration, and it sort of inspired me when I was thinking about it to maybe do like an actual pub rock episode and maybe try and reach out to a couple of different people like yourself that were there to sort of try and collate some sort of like historic kind of thing about it. But what we're saying is maybe the idea of the locations of pub rock speak to the name of it, but doesn't necessarily summarize a lot of the music, especially in Cold Chisels' case. Is that a fair summary of this quickfire?
Yeah, it's funny. No, yeah, I'm still trying to process it. You're right, but there's something about pub rock as that grungy old, where it was all about the energy and not the music. But it wasn't the case at all. When we first started writing songs, all we dreamed of was that big concert stadiums. But it was a fantastic time, and certainly not.
It certainly worked.
Putting it down, and it certainly worked.
Yeah.
And there's some things you get, you seem to get an atmosphere and intimacy going on in in pubs, which you're forever chasing to recapture on a big stage, because something about being that close to each other, you connect with your band members a lot more, and you seem to lock in and feel each other's spot. As soon as you get on a big concert stage and someone's over there and they've got in-ears in, which drive me nuts, because they're another self-isolating thing.
Yep.
It's like you're all on the same stage, playing the same song together at the same time.
Just in your own world.
You're in your own world. And when it's but as soon as we do, recently I played the fantastic The Long Yard Hotel in Tamworth for the third year in a row. And my bass player, Zoe, she's right here, as opposed to sort of 4 feet that way and 6 feet back. And it just makes for such a different and generally a lot more social creatures, a lot more satisfying and memorable experience.
Mm. Maybe the next, Dre had beats. Maybe there's going to be like mossy in-ears, which are not necessarily full on in-ears, but they're more natural. Maybe they're just ears. You can sell them somehow. I don't know how. I'm giving you this one for free to say thank you for coming on the show.
I'll just make a note of that.
Wow. Well, next time you come on, which hopefully you do.
I'll be more than happy to.
You can update us. We can have the Mossy's in-ear check-in and Amp Corner.
Well, there's another whole subject there.
Well, mate, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for all the music. Like, genuinely, this is the first time we met and chatted. So thank you so much in that way. I love it and enjoy it and inspiring. And I wish you all the best with the rest of the tour, and hopefully see you somewhere in Brisbane or Queensland. I'll come out to a show and catch up. But thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Brad. I'm more than happy to come back anytime.
Oh, amazing. Well, that's it for another episode of Ramble City. That was the one and only Ian Moss. Gosh, he's got so many great songs. Visit our show notes if you've never actually heard Ian's music, if you're from the States or for a country where some of his singles didn't cut through, go and check them out. Very similar to kind of my sort of vibe. Tucker's Daughter is a banger. The new album's really beautiful and really enjoyable to listen to from start to finish. I highly recommend that. Maybe I'll see you at one of Ian's shows coming up in Queensland, but he's got tour dates all over the country. Be sure to visit that in the show notes. The episode was engineered, edited, produced by me, Bradley McCaw. Original sound design was by Matt Erskine at Crosspoint Solutions, and the original video was by Adam Shaw. Don't forget to follow us on YouTube for video versions of these episodes, and of course, social media. I'm Bradley McCaw at Bradley McCaw Official, and all my music is available on Spotify. That's it from me. We'll see you next week with another episode of Ramble City. Keep dancing, everyone.